My guest is Daniel Gordis. He is an American who has made Aliyah, i.e. moved to Israel. He is the author of many books, including Saving Israel, If a Place Can Make You Cry, The Promise of Israel, Home to Stay, and he is the Senior Vice President at Shalem College in Jerusalem. Daniel Gordis, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
I should also say that I had the pleasure of moderating a debate, a conversation between Gordis and the head of J Street, Jeremy Ben-Ami, about a month or 6 weeks ago, which was a lot of fun. But to the subject of the book, Menachem Begin, The Battle for Israel's Soul. Why Begin? Why this book?
The truth of the matter is that I grew up in a house that was very much a Ben-Gurion house, kind of a liberal, left-wing, Israeli orientation to politics and so forth. And when the Next Book series first approached me some number of years ago and asked me if I wanted to do a biography for them, I said I'd be honored to. And they asked me, who do you want to write about? And I said, I want to write about David Ben-Gurion. And they said, well, actually, Shimon Peres is doing that one, so it's taken. And I said, okay, he's definitely got it over me on that. He knew Begin for he knew Ben-Gurion for many years. And I kind of got involved with other projects and forgot about this. And then they came back to me a couple years ago and said, let's think about this again. And I really, at that point in my work, was thinking a lot about this whole issue of Jewish peoplehood, about Judaism as being more than a religion, but being an ethnicity and a history and a people and a culture. And I wanted to write about someone who could be seen as embodying that value. And the editor of the series, Jonathan Rosen, said to me, you should write about Menachem Begin. And at first I was really, Menachem Begin? I mean, are you kidding me? He said, take a couple weeks, read a couple biographies, learn about him. And I did, and came across a personality who was infinitely more complex and nuance than I had expected, and spent a couple of years kind of burrowing deep into his life and found somebody really fascinating and I think worthy of great study.
Well, the subtitle of your book, the Menachem Begin, The Battle for Israel's Soul, what do you mean by that?
Israelis at the beginning of the Jewish state in 1948, the early 1950s, were very busy trying to escape their European selves. They were trying to invent a new kind of a Jew. They were looking for a Jew who would escape the dark, dank yeshiva and be found out in the sun-baked fields of the Middle East. They were looking for a Jew who would not be pale-faced and hundled over a book, but a Jew who would be bronzed and strong and plowing the fields by day and patrolling the fire line by night. They were looking to kind of invent a new kind of a Jew, especially after the horrors of the middle of the 20th century. Begin came along at a certain point. He was in the opposition in Israeli politics for 29 years. But what Begin always represented was the claim that, yes, we want to create a new Jewish reality. We want to create a reality in which we can defend ourselves. We certainly want a sovereign Jewish state. But we don't want to do that at the expense of forgetting who we once were. Begin, in contradistinction to many of Israel's former leaders and, frankly, present leaders, believed that the Jewish tradition was critical to giving meaning to the Jewish state. There was no point having a Jewish state if you didn't invest it deeply with Jewish values and Jewish content. The truth of the matter is that what I really wanted the subtitle of the book to be was Israel's Jewish Prime Minister. I wanted it to be Menachem Begin, Israel's Jewish Prime Minister. Not most Jewish Prime Minister, just Israel's Jewish Prime Minister. But it was a little bit edgy, and I think the publisher felt it would be unnecessarily edgy. But I think it's really fair to say that he was the one Prime Minister who embodied deep in his soul a commitment not only to this Jewish state, but to the Jewish tradition and the Jewish people as a kind of an ethnicity with a great, profound culture. And he's actually, I think, a very important reminder, both to Israelis and to observers of the Jewish state from afar, that there's no point having a Jewish state unless you imbue it with Jewish substance.
My guest is the Senior Vice President of Shalem College in Jerusalem and author of many books, Daniel Gordis. We're discussing his new book, Menachem Begin, The Battle for Israel's Soul. Israelis and Israeli politicians are loathed by many people worldwide. I think it's fair to say that Begin perhaps was engendered more negative views from fellow Jews than most Israeli politicians. And as I said before, my father amongst them was not exactly a Begin fan. What was it about the man that made people dislike him so much?
Well, he was, in fact, loathed by many people, as you point out. And when he came to the United States in 1948, Hannah Arendt and Albert Einstein actually joined with a dozen or so other American Jews who were very prominent themselves, writing a letter to the New York Times saying that he was a terrorist and a religious mystic, and they compared him actually to Nazis. It was really kind of disgusting. What got him to be so hated and loathed by American Jews, but people beyond the Jewish community as well? First of all, when he got to Palestine, he was in charge of one of the underground Jewish groups called the Irgun, which was saw it as its responsibility is trying to get the British to release their stranglehold over Palestine, and frankly, to get the British out of Palestine. So while there were three major underground military organizations, the Haganah, which was Ben-Gurion's, the Irgun, which was Begin's, and the Lehi, which was Shamir's, he kind of was the most high-profile one. So some people saw him as a terrorist, and there were many things that he did that are very high-profile, very well-known, most especially the attack on the King David Hotel, in which 90-something people were killed. The intention was never for anyone to be killed. The hotel was called several times and was told to evacuate. They just thought it was a bogus call, and they ignored it. But there was that. There was a famous battle at Deir Yassin in which many innocent Arabs were killed. It was also not the intention. And there, and I outline in the book exactly how things went terribly wrong in that. But so first of all, people saw him as a kind of a malicious user of violence. That's number one. Number two is that David Ben-Gurion was an enormous hero of the Jewish people all across the world. And Ben-Gurion and Begin were kind of arch enemies, political arch enemies. In fact, though, it really cuts the other way. Ben-Gurion actually tried to have Begin killed in July 1948 in a famous incident called the Altalena, when a boat loaded with arms came to Israel's shores. So there was that. There was also the unfortunate reality that he was actually just not, he was not the handsomest guy in the world, and he had a capacity for, when he spoke, of curling up his fist. And if you look at pictures of him from the early 1950s, he actually looked a little bit Hitler-esque. It's actually kind of stunning. But some people called him Adolf Begin to make a point that he actually had a kind of a demagogic attitude about him, or a demagogic way about him. So it was a whole array of things. And the truth of the matter is that also a lot of it is Ben-Gurion's doing. When you go to the Churchill Museum and the war rooms in London, they have these great pithy statements by Churchill. And one of the things that he says is that history will be kind to me, for I intend to write it. History was not kind to Begin because Ben-Gurion wrote it. All of us, left and right, religious and secular, Jewish and Gentile, Israeli and not, everyone more or less reads Israel's history through the eyes and the pen of David Ben-Gurion, who was Israel's founding prime minister. Ben-Gurion had no patience for Begin, and Ben-Gurion is the author of the narrative we have all inherited, and he cast Begin in a certain light. And if anything, what I would like this book to do is to somehow redeem Begin from that narrative. Begin made a lot of mistakes. Ben-Gurion made a lot of mistakes. Begin did some extraordinary things. He was able to make peace with a major Arab country that David Ben-Gurion was never able to. Menachem Begin welcomed black Ethiopian Jews to Israel. David Ben-Gurion had no interest in them whatsoever. So there are many ways in which Begin was able to do things that the left should admire that his arch nemesis from the Labor Party was never able to pull off. But history has not been kind to him, and if this book enables us in some small way to give him the credit that's due him, I'll feel very gratified by that.
My guest is author Daniel Gordis, talking about his new book, Menachem Begin, The Battle for Israel's Soul. He was the leader of one of Israel's greatest military triumphs, which is the bombing of the Iraqi nuclear reactor in Osirak, and he was also the leader for one of Israel's greatest military failures, in a sense, at least failure in terms of its long-term consequences, which was the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. The highs and the lows.
What was the constant, both in those two and also the signing of a peace treaty, which was then with the world's most powerful Arab nation? You could say, how does a guy that signs a peace treaty, gets the Nobel Peace Prize, then go off a couple years later and attack Iraq, and then go off the year after that and stumble into the Lebanon war? The common denominator of all of those things was doing what he thought was best to save Jews and to protect the Jewish people. So when there was an opportunity to make peace with Anwar Sadat, he embraced him, and he actually gave back an enormous amount of land called the Sinai Peninsula in order to make that deal possible. But he had peace with Egypt, but then Iraq was building a nuclear weapon, and he was afraid that he was going to lose the elections in 1981 to Shimon Peres, who, of course, is still a mainstay of Israeli politics, even if in his waning days. And Begin was fearful that Peres simply would not have what it took to destroy that reactor. So at the very last minute before the elections, he went ahead and attacked the reactor. And of course, it was a stunningly brilliant military operation in which all eight planes came back. The target was completely destroyed. But then the PLO was rooted in South Lebanon and was shelling northern Israeli towns. And Begin said the Jews did not get a sovereign state to have their children sleeping in bomb shelters. We're just not going to do this. The middle of the 20th century might have been a period in which Jews cowered in fear, but the end of the 20th century is just not going to be that. By this time, though, he was an older man. He was failing. His wife had died, and Ariel Sharon was leading the military charge. Ariel Sharon was never known for his truth-telling, shall we say. And my own read of history is that Sharon misled Begin, and Begin wanted to stop at a 40-kilometer line inside Lebanon. Sharon had always intended to go all the way to Beirut. Of course, he did. Then there was the very famous and horrible Sabra and Shatila massacre, in which, obviously, Israeli soldiers didn't kill anybody, but Sharon was held accountable, and Begin, by association, was held accountable. And one of the kind of tragic dimensions of Begin's life is that he wins the Nobel Peace Prize for a treaty with Egypt, which a couple of years earlier would have seemed completely unthinkable. And yet, with that great triumph in his pocket, he stumbles into a war in which hundreds of Israeli soldiers are killed. There are no real significant military accomplishments, and of course, a terrible tragedy in Sabra and Shatila takes place. And he kind of withers away. He resigns and hides from Israelis for the last 10 years of his life. He could have exited the stage just a couple of years earlier as the great architect of a peace treaty that is still holding even today. And yet I think he died very broken. His wife had died. He was failing personally in his health. And then, of course, Sharon manipulated him. So there's a way in which his life is both one of extraordinary accomplishment, but also great tragedy. There's a kind of a Shakespearean or almost Greek quality to the tragedy in that he comes to Palestine in 1942, begins the revolt against the British, has to go into hiding for several years until 1947-ish when the British announce that they're leaving. So he begins his life in Palestine, hiding from the British. He ends his life in Israel, hiding from the Israelis. But in the middle, he was a man who restored a sense of Jewish consciousness to Israeli political life. He was the architect of the great, still reigning Israeli peace treaty. He was the architect of the Begin Doctrine, which said that no mortal enemy of the Jewish state is going to be allowed to have a weapon of mass destruction. So tremendous accomplishments, tremendous lows, really a fascinating life.
Tomorrow, I'll continue my conversation with Daniel Gordis on his new book, Menachem Begin, The Battle for Israel's Soul.